This is Decision 2006. Tonight, the Democratic debate for governor. And now, from Pace University, here's New York One political anchor Dominic Carter.
And welcome to the Schimmel Theater at Pace University in Lower Manhattan. Tonight's debate is being broadcast on New York One, New York One Noticias, and WNYC AM 820 Radio, New York City, Capital News 9 in Albany, R News in Rochester, and News 10 Now in Syracuse. The hour-long debate is also being seen on News 12 on Long Island and News 12 Westchester and heard on radio stations across upstate New York. Now to the journalists joining me tonight. Here is our panel. Sandra Endel of New York One News. Brian Lehrer of WNYC Radio. Juan Manuel Benitez of New York One Noticias, and Brian Taff of Capital Tonight. For the gentlemen, we are all waiting to hear from tonight the two candidates, State Attorney General Eliot Spitzer, and Nassau County Executive Tom Suozzi. The format of tonight's debate is as follows. Each candidate will have a 1 minute opening statement. Then, starting with myself, we will directly ask one candidate a question. The candidate will have 90 seconds to respond. The other candidate will then have a 60-second rebuttal. If the person asking the question or I decide to do so, the first candidate may then have a 30-second additional response. The panelists and myself have the right to follow up our questions, which will not be taken out of the candidate's allotted time. The candidates will also have two opportunities tonight to ask each other questions. And we will end this debate with a series of lightning round questions where the candidates can only answer yes or no to the questions that I will ask them. We think you will enjoy that. And that will be followed by a 1 minute closing statement. I will begin things by turning to the candidates now for their opening statements, and we start with the Nassau County Executive, Tom Suozzi.
Thank you, Dominic. New York State government is dysfunctional. Both parties are rotten to the core. We have major problems that exist in this state. Now, Elliot's been in office for the past 7.5 years in Albany, and he's never really focused on government reform. Instead, he's focused on Wall Street. Why? It's government that is hurting us. Now he's embraced by all the politicians, all the insiders, and all the lobbyists who have given us this broken system. There's a real difference between Eliot Spitzer and me. There's a real choice in this race. I have a proven record as a government reformer, a record as a CEO where I've proven that government can work for the people. As your governor, I'll do everything I can, and I'll stand up to whoever I have to make sure that we improve our schools here in New York City. I'll make sure that we reduce our property taxes, and I'll create jobs throughout our state. I can do it because I've done it. As Nassau County Executive, I took the worst-run county in the nation and made it one of the most dramatic turnarounds in this country. New York needs a governor who can do its job. I can do it because I've done it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Suozzi. And now for the Attorney General of New York State, Mr. Eliot Spitzer.
Thank you, Dominic. Thank you to the panelists. Thank you to all the stations sponsoring this debate. And thank you most of all to the citizens of New York who have given me the unbelievable honor and privilege over the last 7.5 years of serving as your Attorney General. When I took over on January 1 of 1999, everything changed. An office that was moribund was transformed into an office that spoke to the ethics, the values, the moral vision that we believe in. We took on pharmaceutical companies that were lying to the public, companies out of state that were polluting our air, government agencies that were defrauding us, that were wasting our tax dollars. And yes, we took on those companies on Wall Street that were violating their trust to us by squandering and lying to us and wasting away our pension dollars and our savings. If I am fortunate enough to be elected governor on January 1 of 2007, everything will change again. I will take those same values, those ethics, that moral vision, and transform the governor's office so that we will first and foremost revive an economy by cutting property taxes, controlling spending, investing in the infrastructure that we need. We will begin to reform an educational system, a healthcare system that are dysfunctional, and we will fundamentally change government so that it reflects the moral vision that we all share. I hope you will join me in that effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spitzer. And now, gentlemen, it is time to turn to the questions. And Mr. Swazi, you will face the first question tonight from myself. It is a two-part question. Why should voters have any confidence that you have the experience or the knowledge to lead the entire state? You have shown that you are very good at upsetting the apple cart, if you will, on the campaign trail, accusing Mr. Spitzer of being the ultimate Albany insider, charging he has expressed very few specifics to tell us how he will pay for his ideas. But why should anyone think that you will be able to work well with the leaders of the state legislature next year? And Mr. Swazi, while you have referred to Mr. Spitzer as the ultimate insider, in Nassau County, are you an insider of sorts in which you have apparently taken donations for your golf outing from companies that receive county contracts, and apparently you have used county employees to gather your petitions to get on the ballot? Do you want it both ways here?
That sounds like an eight-part question, Dominic, but I will try and answer every single piece of it. That's really the perfect question. I do have to convince the voters of New York State that I'm the better candidate for governor of the state of New York. Now, the difference between Elliot and I is that he's a prosecutor. I'm a chief executive, and the thing that I've established in my experience as county executive of Nassau County, that I can take a large, complex government and make it work better for the people. Nassau County was rated literally the worst-run county in the United States. Its bond rating was one step above junk bond status. It had massive deficits. Now, fast forward to today, 4 years later, Nassau County is considered the most dramatic financial turnaround in the nation. We've received more bond upgrades than any municipality in the United States. I beat the Republican machine in Nassau County. I became the first Democrat with a Democratic legislature in Nassau County since 1917. And I did it. I had to stand up to my own party in the process. I had to run a Democratic primary against the Democratic chairman. So my whole race, whether it's the government, reforming government, making government work, battling with Albany and getting things done in Albany, or the politics of standing up to powerful political machines, my message is the same. I can do it because I've done it. Elliott's been in office for 7.5 years. He promised us he would go after government corruption. Yet the headlines he's received over the past 7.5 years have been about Wall Street and the insurance industry and the record industry. He has not gone after government corruption. He's not gone after the dysfunctional system that we have in Albany. It's not a matter of getting along with the legislators. It's a matter of making the reforms that are necessary so that they realize it's in their political interest to make those reforms.
Thank you, Mr. Swazi. Mr. Spitzer.
Yes, sir.
Your reaction to what he just said, and then I have a question for you.
Well, I think that Tom, and I give him credit for some successes in Nassau, but I think that the reality is that the financial turnaround that he has highlighted is a consequence of one thing, property tax increases. One of the things that we have not heard from Mr. Swazi is that when he came into office, he promised that he would not raise property taxes. And yet what he has done is raise property taxes, first when he was the mayor of Glen Cove, second when he was the county executive. Third, it is built into his upcoming budget. Fourth, he has proposed a tax on a toll on the LIE. And fifth, to pay for what he now pretends will be a property tax cut that he supports, he's talking about a $1 billion sales tax increase. And so I would say to Mr. Swazi, what you have done repeatedly is raise taxes. What I have done is use the tools available to me He makes much of the fact that I've been a prosecutor. Indeed, that's what the role of attorney general is. I have done the job I have had. I would now like to take on another job where I will be able to do more in certain areas. But we have done a remarkable amount in Medicaid, which I know we will talk about, up 2,000% in recoveries. Government authorities that nobody had been talking about. We have said over and over they must be fundamentally reformed. We have led that charge. I am enormously proud of what we have done in that regard.
Mr. Spitzer, let me ask you a quick follow-up here. Sort of along the lines of the questions that I just directed towards Mr. Swazi, why should anyone expect real change from you when many of your supporters are the members of the current political establishment?
Dominic, the supporters whom I value, the supporters who are legion out there, are the real people of New York State, whose interests I've represented. When I go up to Lackawanna and I speak to voters in the street and they say thank you for standing up to the polluters, the pharmaceutical companies, the corruption in government, they say thank you. I thank the cops, the firefighters, the Sierra Club, NARAL. These are not partisan interests. These are real people who speak to the values, the concerns that we share. That is what I care about.
Mr. Swazi?
Dominic, this is why we need to have multiple debates, because Elliot Spitzer just said that the way I solved the problem in Nassau County was by raising property taxes, and that's all I relied on. And he knows that's just false. I reduced the workforce to the smallest it's been in 30 years. I cut $100 million in waste, fraud, and abuse. I stood up to the most powerful political interest, the PBA union out in Nassau County, to get historic concessions from them. I cut borrowing in half. I raised property taxes my first year in office. But I'm the only county in all of New York State, the entire state of New York, that has not raised property taxes for the past 3 years in a row. I took what was the worst-run county in this country. This is the difference between you and I, Elliot. You don't understand what it takes to manage a large, complex, multi-billion-dollar government. It requires a whole panoply of things, and we have to continue to debate these issues so that people will find out the real differences between you and I. Being a prosecutor, you can't solve the problems of New York State by issuing subpoenas and filing lawsuits. You've got to manage employees, you've got to stand up to powerful political interests, and you have to make the government work for the people. For the past 7.5 years, you have not done that in office.
A quick rebuttal,
Dominic, if I'm entitled to that.
A quick rebuttal.
Absolutely.
A quick rebuttal from the Attorney General, and then we'll move on to the panel.
Dominic, if I could be very clear, you cannot change all the problems with subpoenas and lawsuits. We have encountered many problems, solved many major issues. There are other problems only a governor can solve. That is why I'm running for governor. That is why I'm asking the public support in that regard.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. It is now time to go to our panel, and we start with our own Sandra Endell.
Thank you so much, Dominic. Mr. Spitzer, this question is for you, and we're talking about lawsuits here. The state's highest court ruled that same-sex marriages are not legal in New York. You said if elected governor, you would draft legislation to legalize gay marriage. Yet as state attorney general, you argued against it on behalf of the state. If you felt so strongly that same-sex marriages should be legal, why didn't you recuse yourself from the suit?
Because the role of recusal is not one where you disagree with the outcome or the position of the state. My client over the last 7.5 years has been the state of New York. I am constitutionally obligated. It is my sworn duty to represent the state. Every attorney general over years has understood that. It is the right and only thing to do. And in fact, we have done so in many cases where I disagreed with a particular outcome of the case, but that is the job. And anybody running for this office should understand it. Any lawyer should understand it. Now, my particular position on the issue has also been very clear. I have said with great clarity that I think same-sex marriage should be legal. I will propose a bill to permit that to be the case here in the state of New York, and I will act on that if I'm fortunate enough to be elected governor next January 1st.
Since we're talking about specifics here in the debate, what other cases specifically did you disagree with, yet you had to argue on behalf of the state for?
Sure. I will give you one where, again, we won, but I wish that the policy were otherwise. Cameras in the courtroom, which I think is a critically important issue in terms of media access to the judicial system. I believe we should permit cameras in the courtroom. I have said so publicly. I have supported the legislation that would permit cameras to be permitted into the courtroom, and yet the Court of Appeals, pursuant to our arguments, deemed that statute that bans them to be constitutional. So we won the case, But again, I disagree with the outcome, but that is the job of being Attorney General. There is a huge array of cases,
How about school funding specifically?
School funding, again, I have said repeatedly I would come to a different result with respect to the CFE issues that, again, no doubt we will discuss this evening, but it is the constitutional obligation of the Attorney General of the state to represent his or her client. That is the state of New York, and that is what I have done. The public understands it, and I think it is the right and only thing to do.
All right, Mr. Suozzi.
You have a very
different view on gay marriage, and you don't support same-sex marriages, yet you have said that you hope for a way for gay and lesbian couples in long-term relationships to have, quote, the same economic rights and legal protections as married couples. Why not let same-sex couples get married like anyone else?
Let me first respond to some of the points that Elliot just made in his response with a lot of legalese and technicalities. It's shocking to me when asked which cases he disagreed with the governor on that he brought up cameras in the courtroom and not the Campaign for Fiscal Equity as the first case. I mean, he knows. I'm a lawyer. He said lawyers should know this. I know as a lawyer that in every instance you could have hired outside counsel if you disagreed with the governor. Your commercials say, I represent the people of New York. It doesn't say, I represent the governor. So the reality is, every one of your predecessors, every single attorney general in the history of the state of New York has hired outside counsel when they disagreed with the governor on serious political matters. Now, regarding same-sex marriage, I am opposed to gay marriage. Elliot supports gay marriage. I believe that every single person, regardless of their sexual orientation, is entitled to be treated with human respect and dignity. And I believe that gay couples, same-sex couples, lesbian couples should have the opportunity to enjoy the same legal rights and economic benefits that heterosexual couples do. As county executive in Nassau County, I provided for health insurance for same-sex couples who work in our government. And I would, as governor, work to create civil unions so that legal and economic benefits could be provided for same-sex couples. But I do not agree with Elliot Spitzer, and I do not support gay marriage.
However, a lot of gay rights activists argue that they just want recognition here, Mr. Suozzi. So isn't it discriminatory in name only, then?
It is, I think, a lot to do with semantics. But for me and my religion, gay marriage, or marriage, I should say, is a sacrament. And I believe that many other people feel the same way. But I think that you can have the same legal and economic benefits through civil unions to provide for inheritance rights, for health insurance benefits, for opportunities to enjoy a lot of the same legal and economic benefits.
Mr. Spitzer, you have a chance to respond.
Great, thank you. Yeah. If I could make two quick points. First, semantics is not what this is about. This is about equality. Equality means giving people the rights that they are entitled to, and that means marriage. Second, and this is a very fundamental point that I think every lawyer should understand, it would have been the height of arrogance on my part to say to the governor, to the citizens, the taxpayers, I disagree with this case, therefore I will force you to shoulder the burden of $10, $20, $30 million of legal expenses because I don't want to represent the state. And Tom, you are simply wrong. You are simply wrong when you say other attorneys general have done that. They haven't done it. It's the wrong thing to do. This is what the job requires. It is obligatory. It is my sworn oath of office, and I'm proud to have done it.
Thank you.
Elliot, specifically.
Okay.
Let me just say this one point. Very brief.
In the CFE case, your predecessor had outside counsel to represent the state in that matter, and you brought it in-house. Now, why would you do that if you disagreed with the policy?
I disagree because it was costing. First, the representation was terrible. He chose a politically connected law firm, gave it out as a contract, and it was costing the taxpayers tens of millions of dollars.
So you disagreed with the suit.
Okay.
It was wrong and improper,
and that is why.
So you disagree with the policy.
For the past seven and a half years,
you've gone along with that
policy.
Can
we please get along, gentlemen?
Can we just get along?
We have to stick to the rules here. And for the audience, I would please ask you to try to keep your reaction at a minimum, simply for the fact that we want to try and get as much information from these two men that want to be governor as possible. Let's now move to the next question. It is coming tonight from Brian Lair.
Thank you, Dominic. Mr. Suozzi, New York State currently has no death penalty statute. If you are elected governor, would you introduce one?
No, I'm opposed to the death penalty.
Is there any version of a death penalty law that the legislature could pass that you would sign?
I have always been opposed to the death penalty on principle, and I will always remain opposed to the death penalty on principle.
For cop killers, for terrorists?
I'm opposed to the death penalty.
Mr. Spitzer, same question. Would you introduce a death penalty statute if elected governor, and is there any version of one that the legislature could pass that you would sign?
Brian, I have always been philosophically comfortable that the death penalty is appropriate in the context of cases against humanity, crimes against humanity, terrorism, intentional murder of a police officer. Yes, I believe the death penalty is an appropriate sanction. And to answer your follow-up, yes, there will be a bill that will be introduced, and there will be one that I would sign in that context.
What will you introduce specifically?
Well, I'm not going to give you the precise provisions and statutes, but those categories of crimes that I just delineated for you, I believe the death penalty is an appropriate sanction for. But again, let me say something else. This has not been at the top of my priority list as a matter of law enforcement. As a prosecutor for many, many years, I know those measures that win, that reduce the rate of crime, the DNA legislation that I pushed for very aggressively this year. That is the sort of bill that has a real impact in the street that I will push for.
You say it hasn't been at the top of your agenda, but when you first ran for Attorney General in 1994, you distinguished yourself from the other Democratic Party candidates by making a point of your support for the death penalty. That was before the revelations about DNA technology and wrongful convictions. Has your position evolved at all since 1994?
My position, Brian, has always been the same, that it is an appropriate sanction for those crimes that I delineated, where we must have with enormous precision the process, the procedural rules to ensure that we do not have issues of error. And interestingly, since you go back to the 94 race, the first issue I raised in the 94 race was DNA testing, long before it had become a popular issue. The issue I raised initially was DNA, because I said this is a technology that will permit us both to convict and to exonerate. That was the very first issue I raised as a candidate for Attorney General.
Mr. Swazi, brief response?
Elliott did not make those distinctions back in 1994 in his previous campaigns. He sought the death penalty in all instances of capital crimes.
Tom, I hate to say it, but that's simply wrong, Tom.
Suggest that you limited it to terrorists back in 1994 and to cop killers in 1994 is just not accurate. Actually, ran television commercials, did literature on it, saying that this was his big issue.
Okay.
Thank you both.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. And now we turn for the next question from my New York One colleague, Juan Manuel Benitez from New York One Noticias.
Thank you, Dominic, and this is for Mr. Spitzer. And under a provision of the Deficit Reduction Act in effect since July 1st, states are required to demand proof of citizenship to any Medicaid applicants. Would you enforce this provision if elected governor? And if not, are you considering any kind of statewide executive order similar to New York City's number 41, which prohibits city employees from asking questions about a person's immigration status?
Yes, I am. I would not enforce that provision. I disagree with it. I do not believe that it is the role of the state to be transformed into one big INS agent. It is antithetical to what my views on immigration policy. In fact, over the last number of years as Attorney General, I have needed to rebuff the efforts of the current Department of Justice in Washington that has tried to force my office and other prosecutorial offices in New York State to participate and ask every witness, every crime victim, to make us INS agents. And I said, no, we are a city and a state of immigrants. We believe in immigrant rights. We believe that that is not the way to resolve this issue. That is politics in its worst form coming out of Washington. We have a more sophisticated, more nuanced, more appropriate view here in New York State.
Mr. Swazi.
I've always been a very strong supporter of immigrant rights and continue to be so, and I actually agree with Elliott on this one particular provision. And we would not try and take over the role of the federal government to enforce their laws. It's inappropriate, I believe, for local officials, whether it's police officers or Medicaid applicant recipients or anyone else in state government, to take over the job of federal officials. If a crime is committed, it's appropriate for law enforcement to find out if someone has citizenship or not. But otherwise, it's completely inappropriate. I have a long record as the mayor of the city of Glen Cove and as the county executive of Nassau County for standing up for immigrant rights and support the McCain-Kennedy bill that was recently proposed in the United States Senate. And I also worked as mayor of the city of Glen Cove 12 years ago to create the first site for as a gathering spot for newcomers from Central and South America, which has been a very heated issue. It's the first place anywhere in the United States of America on the East Coast to provide for such a provision.
Thank you. And just one quick thing to Mr. Spitzer. So would you consider any kind of
a... I can't hear you.
Do you consider any kind of executive order like number 41 here in New York City?
Yes, I would.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Juan Manuel. And now we turn to my colleague, Brian Taft.
Thank you, Dominic. Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for coming. My question is geared towards Mr. Swazi. As Dominic mentioned at the top of the debate tonight, the breadth of our audience stretches from one end of New York State to the other. So we'd be remiss if we did not bring up what has been described as an upstate-downstate divide, a relationship between the two that has been historically marked with tension, even hostility at times, each side accusing the other of taking more than their fair share. That said, Mr. Swazi, the legislature is comprised mostly of downstate residents. You yourself are a downstate resident. How do you at once address what has been described as that upstate-downstate divide and, given the fact that you are a downstater, convince our upstate viewers tonight that their issues matter to you and that you intend to address them equitably?
I think that I'm the better candidate for upstate residents, for residents of Western New York and throughout the state, because I grew up in a small town, and I understand the problems that are being faced in many upstate communities right now. As mayor of the city of Glen Cove, I came into office, and our stores were closed up in the downtown. People were hanging out in the street corners. The windows were boarded up. I know what it's like to love your hometown and see the place falling apart, and that's the big issue that's happening throughout most of upstate right now in Western New York as well. People want to move back to their hometowns, and they can't. They graduate from college. They want to go find a job, and they can't find a job. I believe I'm the best person to create jobs in upstate New York. For years, we've been hearing about politicians saying they're going to create jobs. It hasn't happened. And the only way it's going to happen is not through new programs. It's going to happen because you need to change the hostile business climate that now exists in New York State. I've specifically proposed to reduce property taxes in New York State. I've specifically proposed that we change the Wicks law and we change the binding arbitration laws in New York State that many special interests that support Mr. Spitzer don't want us to change. I've specifically proposed that we change some of the laws that make the cost of doing business here in New York State too expensive. You know, our insurance costs are some of the highest in the nation because of the scaffolding law. Our workers' compensation costs are some of the highest in the nation because of attempts by the legislature to please the trial lawyers. If we're going to make New York State competitive again, we need to change these laws. We need to reduce property taxes. We need to create a better environment for business to locate here. Now, downstate New York, it masks the fact that our business climate is so hostile because we have economic engines like Wall Street and the insurance industry and the entertainment industry and the real estate industry. But if you cut off north of Putnam and Rockland County, it would be the poorest state in the United States of America. We've lost half the population over the past couple decades. So, as governor of New York, I have three priorities: reduce property taxes, improve schools in our cities, and create jobs upstate New York.
Okay. We'll talk, hopefully, a bit more about the business climate coming up in the debate. But, Mr. Spitzer, critics of the way the present administration has been run have suggested that the epicenter of government in New York State has moved from Albany increasingly downstate, less state business getting done in Albany, where it historically has always been done. That leads me to ask you if you, as governor, would move the epicenter of government back to New York, back to Albany, if not just for the appearance of doing business in the capital upstate, and does that include living in the governor's mansion?
The answer is, I think there are three yeses that follow from your question, but let me parse it a little bit. I have traveled the state for 7.5 years as attorney general. I've been in every town, every village. I've seen the despair. I've seen the outflow of our kids, 180,000. Population loss over the last 4 years. I don't think it's half of our population, Tom, but it is 180,000 over the last 4 years, 25% of our kids, 20 to 34. And I have a program, I have ideas that will rejuvenate our economy. But most importantly, over the last 7.5 years, nobody has come up to me and said, Elliot, you're from the Bronx, you don't understand the problems in Erie County or in Watertown or wherever it happened to be. People have said to me, thank you for taking up our cause. It is the cause of equity, decency, fairness, justice. Those are the issues people care about. And they've said to me, you are fighting for those purposes and those causes. That's what I will continue to do. Now, specifically when it comes to property taxes, let me be very clear. The property tax proposal that I have, a $6 billion three-year property tax cut, is focused on the middle class, focused on those, the farmers, those who need the benefit of this tax plan, those who will benefit. Tom's plan, unfortunately, is focused only on 10 counties. It doesn't go to the vast number of counties, those individuals across the state who need help. The economic development program I proposed for our upstate cities, investing in our universities, residential construction, special sectors that will do better, those ideas will bring our kids back, bring jobs back, bring hope back.
Okay, got to end it there. Mr. Swazi, if you so choose, Mr. Spitzer took issue with something in particular you said. Would you like to respond?
I'd like to respond by saying I've talked to families throughout the state. I've talked to employees. I've talked to business leaders. And they've said very specifically that if businesses are to locate in New York State, especially in the upstate area, we have to be more competitive. It has to be a less hostile business environment. The number one reason that people locate in a particular town is because of their job. And if the business is not there, the job's not there. The job's not there, the people aren't there. Now, to create a less hostile business climate in New York State is going to require us to change some of the laws that make our business climate too expensive in New York State. Elliot Spitzer has been asked specifically, would he change the Wicks law? He's been asked specifically, would he change the binding arbitration laws? He's been asked specifically, would he change workers' compensation and scaffolding law? And his response is, I won't tell you.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Swazi.
Dominic, if I might respond.
Go ahead quickly, Mr. Spitzer.
Tom, look, let me just make sure, you know, as a lawyer, I do always like to make sure that the record is clear so that you can argue the case. The answer was, of course we're going to change those laws. We must change the Wicks law. We must change binding arbitration. These are all issues that, of course, we have to address. All of my supporters understand it. The citizens understand it. We are unified in that perspective. The issue is getting it done. That is the issue.
Quickly, Mr. Swazi.
The problem that exists in New York State right now is that the legislature has no incentive to make the difficult decisions that have to be made, because whether they make the right decision or wrong decision, they get reelected anyway. There's a 98.5% reelection rate. And we have to hold... Mr. Spitzer has embraced the status quo. We'll simply be replacing a Republican governor with a Democratic governor who will tinker around the edges if Mr. Spitzer is elected governor of New York State. We need complete wholesale reform of our entire government in New York State. I can do it because I've done it.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And now it is time to give the candidates an opportunity, a chance to ask a question of their opponent. They will be limited to 90 seconds, and there will be no rebuttals. And so we begin with you, Mr. Tom Swazi.
Elliot, I've said very clearly that you're not the right governor for the state of New York right now because you don't have experience as a chief executive. I've also said that you're much too entangled in the insider culture that exists in Albany and have never used your public integrity unit to go after government corruption in New York state government. Can you please tell me, Mr. Spitzer, Elliot, why you believe I wouldn't be a good governor for the state of New York?
Well, Tom, here's one important distinction between us. I'm not going to delineate why I don't think you'd be a good governor. I don't believe in that sort of politics. I will respond to some of the points you made that are unfortunately just flat out false, but I'm not going to say anything negative about you, and we'll get to that issue in a bit later. I created the public integrity.
You'll get to the negative part a bit later?
I will. Now, the things you have said about me, Tom. I created the public integrity unit. I got enormous pushback from DAs around the state who said, you can't do it. I invoked a statute, the Tweed Law, that hadn't been used for about 100 years and said, we will pursue government corruption. We did it with sheriff's offices, public authorities. Alan Hevesy and I have proposed a raft of legislative bills to change the authorities. I am the one who said 5 years ago the public authorities are to state government what the off-balance sheet partnerships were to Enron. I was called the Crusader of the Year by Time Magazine. Not because I'm a voice of the status quo. I was called the best public servant in the nation by Reader's Digest. Not because I'm a voice of the status quo. I speak to reform. I speak to ethics. I speak to values. I speak to the moral vision of the great state of New York.
Okay. There's no rebuttal on the question.
Specifically, Mr. Spitzer, it's not me. It was the New York Times in 2004 that said very clearly, you took your energies and went after Wall Street and the insurance industry, and you did not bring the same vigor towards the ills of Albany and state government. Well, we have the most dysfunctional legislature in the United States of America. More legislators in New York state government have been indicted in the past 3 years than have lost their elections at the polling booth. You have not, during your time in office, gone after the broken, dysfunctional system that exists in New York state government, despite your pledge to do so when you first ran for Attorney General.
Tom, again, Tom. As the great Senator Pat Moynihan said, we are all entitled to our own opinions. We're not entitled to our own facts. Tom, you're simply wrong. We have made the cases against authorities, elected officials, non-elected officials, authorities. When I took on NYRA, one of the most powerful authorities in Albany, the New York Racing Authority, I was told by the chairman, who called me and said, we indicted 21 people. He called me and he said, Elliot, you're on a witch hunt, something I've heard in every context when we rattled the cage of the system. And I said back to him, this isn't Salem. We found witches. And we convicted 20 of those 21. The 21st person, unfortunately, died before trial. We win those cases. We bring them. We uncover the fraud and abuse in government.
Okay. Mr. Swazi, I have to step in.
I've got to point out, Mr. Swazi, he went after the tellers in the betting cages.
During your response,
he didn't go after
Mr.
the power
Swazi,
brokers in Albany.
Mr. Swazi, thank you very much. Mr. Spitzer, it is time for your question.
Tom, you have said, you said when you got into this race, I have nothing against Elliot Spitzer. I won't knock him down in this campaign. He deserves the reputation that he enjoys. He's done a great job as Attorney General. And then, since then, you've given only two substantive speeches. Every day there's been another press release which has personal vitriol. 80% of them have nothing but venom directed towards me, towards my family. You know, you've compared me to all sorts of things. You called me King George. You said standing up to me was like fighting tyranny. Last time I checked, Tom, we hadn't taxed any of your tea. I don't understand. What happened to the notion of an affirmative campaign so we could talk about education, housing, transportation, the issues that matter to the public?
Elliot, Elliot, if you recall, you didn't bring up the substantive issue of property taxes until I confronted you at the Mineola train station. You have refused throughout this campaign to give specific details as to how you'll pay for the very sunny promises you've made. You've promised that you'll spend over $20 billion in new transportation projects. You've promised over $1 billion in new scientific research. You told the environmental community that you'll put more money into the environmental program. You told the state workers that you'll hire more public employees. You told people after our confrontation that you would reduce people's property taxes. You've told us you'll fully fund the schools, even though you took the position you took on the CFE case. But you have not given specific details as to how you'll pay for these multi-billion-dollar proposals that you've made. So I know that you may say that that's personal vitriol, but this is the United States of America, and I would like to debate you on substantive issues in this type of forum every time we get the opportunity. We've been invited in 9 debates, and I have agreed to every single one of those debates. And if you'll debate me on the issues, I'll meet you any place, any time, to talk about one debate about property taxes, one debate about housing, one debate about schools, and one debate about jobs upstate New York, so we can discuss in detail our different ideas we have to solve the problems for the people of the state of New York.
Dominic, am I permitted here?
Mr. Spitzer.
Dominic, if I might be permitted a quick rebuttal here. First, Tom, I didn't consider that a confrontation at the train station. That's just a warm embrace you gave me. You wouldn't let go. So I enjoyed it.
Very nice, yes.
Second, let me be very clear. I've been talking about property taxes since the first day of this campaign. I have a $6 billion plan that is more specific than yours. In fact, you haven't yet explained how the money will be delivered to folks, where it goes. The numbers don't add up. I've explained how we will pay for it. The Comptroller and I, Alan Hevesy, the most meticulous voice for public and fiscal restraint in the state, and I have an $11 billion budget cut proposal that is detailed and is conservative, overwhelms the $6 billion property tax cut, leaves us $5 billion. And Tom, again, to quote Senator Moynihan, you're not entitled to your own facts. You're simply way off base. The transportation proposals, and again, you haven't proposed anything about transportation except a tax on the LIE. Our transportation proposals are fully funded through 2009. Our housing program that I've laid out is funded. We have paid for what we are going to do.
Thank you, Mr. Spitzer. Quickly, Mr. Swazi.
Mr. Spitzer, as I've said before, if your property tax plan was a Wall Street firm, you would have indicted it already. The reality is... is that you propose in your property
tax
plan...
Would that be one case you'd actually support against Wall Street, Tom?
In your property tax plan, you've proposed to get $500-some-odd million from the bigger, better bottle bill, which you don't point out the fact that law has not been passed for the past 4 years, and that you previously pledged those same $500 million to the environmental community to pay for environmental programs. In addition, in your plan, you rely on going after Medicaid fraud.
Okay,
as the Attorney General of the State of New York, you have 300 employees, and you have not gone after Medicaid fraud with the vigor that you should have because it's the most expensive program in the state.
I have to step in the interest of time. We have to move on. And before we go back to our panel, I would like to ask another question of both of you. A breaking story in terms of it exists as of right now in Queens started earlier this week, 100,000 people with no power. The agency in charge, Con Ed, but this is a situation that really could affect any city in this state. Mr. Spitzer, you issued a report on Con Ed for the 1999 blackout in Washington Heights. Did you do any follow-up after this report that was somewhat critical? What happened? And also, do you agree with New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg that Con Ed CEO Kevin Burke deserves praise, or have you lost confidence in Burke should he go?
Let me answer sequentially. The report we put out in 1999, which was a remarkably thorough report with respect to both the Washington Heights and the Inwood blackout, said to Con Ed, here are the specific steps you have to take to address the distribution system failures, the transformers, the overheating, the potential for another blackout that exists right now. That was 1999. We have followed up with Con Ed and said, what have you done? The reason I want to be governor is because the governor controls an agency called the Public Service Commission. I don't. I can't. We have argued with the PSC about what they have not done to enforce our recommendations. The Public Service Commission could have and should have enforced our recommendations. Had they done so, then there's a very real possibility this blackout would not have occurred. We put out a report after the 2003 blackout as well, and made other recommendations. And we said to the PSC then, you are failing in your duty to the public to ensure investment in the transmission system, in the grid. These are technical issues, but this is what a governor should do. And this is why I want to be governor, because there are answers, but they have not been implemented. Now, do I share my good friend Mike Bloomberg's view about the CEO of Con Ed? Absolutely not. I was stunned that he said it. Now, I think we need to dig very deeply and develop the record, figure out where the breakdowns were, and make sure people are held accountable. It will happen. It's got to happen. But the failures are twofold. Both Con Ed's for failure to address these issues that were highlighted for them years ago, and the Public Service Commission, which is directly controlled by the governor of the state of New York.
So, Mr. Spitzer, for the record, you're saying you disagree with Mayor Bloomberg's praise, and you didn't answer the question of whether or not Mr. Burke should go.
How many people should go depends upon the record that we will develop over the next few weeks and months. Many people will go and should go. We don't know who. We don't know how far down. As a prosecutor, I do not believe in jumping to conclusions until we see the whole
record. What do you mean many people will go? I don't understand the response.
Because the failure of Con Ed clearly runs very deep. In 1999, we gave them a report which said, here are the specific steps you must take. Here are the measures that are important to ensure that there will not be additional blackouts. They failed to implement them. How many people, including the CEO, subordinate to the CEO, are responsible for that failure? How many people dissembled, lied, misrepresented to the public? We will have to find out. Those are decisions and issues we will dig into. Clearly, the failure was enormous. The pain and agony in Queens to thousands and thousands of individuals, businesses, is enormous, and this is a tragedy.
Thank you. Mr. Swazi?
Let me first say that my heart goes out to the families in Queens. There are a lot of news stories, but they don't really tell the whole story about how people are really suffering. There are a lot of senior citizens that are in a lot of trouble. There are a lot of businesses that are going to lose their livelihood because of this. There are a lot of people that are really hurting because of this blackout. As the county executive in Nassau County, as the mayor of Glen Cove, I've dealt with these situations. with our local power authority, the Long Island Power Authority. In each instance, when there was a major blackout like this, I would actually go to the Emergency Operations Center and keep an eye on what was actually transpiring at the utility and coordinate with them. I'd provide them with help from our Public Works Department, from our Police Department, from our Health Department. We'd put them in touch with any resource we could to try and coordinate together. This is a big difference, again, between Elliot and I. Elliot talks about a report that he wrote. Well, there's an old expression that Italians use. My father was born in Italy. Guarda le mani, non ascoltare la bocca, which means watch the hands, don't listen to the mouth. It's easy to write reports and say I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I've addressed these type of problems throughout my career as a chief executive, as the mayor of the city of Glen Cove and as the county executive of Nassau County to try and address problems like this. I'm in no position whatsoever to second-guess Mayor Bloomberg, who's on the ground, who's dealing with the people at Con Ed, to find out what's going on, because I trust his judgment as a chief executive. There's no question that people have been hurt very seriously. There's no question that Con Ed should have done a better job. But I'm not going to second-guess the mayor and say that he was wrong.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Suozzi.
There's no rebuttal on that, sir.
Okay, thank you. We now go to our second round of questions. We have time for two questions. We'll start with Sandra Indo.
Thank you so much, Dominic. Mr. Suozzi, we all know tonight that we're a few blocks from Ground Zero here at Pace University, and there's another roadblock in terms of the rebuilding at the site. Now insurance companies may not pay billions of dollars needed for the site because the Port Authority is taking over some of the development from leaseholder Larry Silverstein. What would you do to resolve this situation, and why do you think you're more qualified than Elliot Spitzer to oversee development there?
You know, there's so many people in this city, there's so many people in this state, in this nation, in the world that are waiting for Ground Zero to move forward. And it's a tragedy that it's taken as long as it has. I believe that I'm more qualified to address this issue because of my experience as a CEO, as a manager, as a county executive, as a mayor, as a CPA and a lawyer as well. I've built buildings, nothing on this scale, obviously. I've overseen development projects. I brought together all the varied resources and brought the people together into the room to negotiate the differences, to resolve problems, to make things happen. Again, I can do it because I've done it. You're not going to be able to summon the insurance company in with a subpoena. You're not going to be able to summon in the different players with a lawsuit. You're going to have to bring the players together and find out what their different interests are so you can hold them accountable for what they're responsible for. I will build the Freedom Tower. I'm not going to second-guess the building's construction. I believe that too many people in the state and in the country and in the world are relying on us to get it done. And I believe that my background and experience as a chief executive makes me better equipped to get it done than Elliot.
You said while you're used to bringing people together to get resolutions done, how do you see yourself working with Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver if you continue to criticize him on the campaign trail?
You know, I started my Fix Albany campaign talking about how dysfunctional Albany was. And I said I have to defeat a Democrat in the Assembly and a Republican in the State Senate because both parties are responsible for the dysfunction that exists in Albany. And it was based upon that campaign. People said to me at the time, how are you going to get anything done in Albany if you're fighting with Shelley Silver? How are you going to get anything done if you're fighting with Joe Bruno? But it was after my victories that I achieved in those campaigns, and I became the president of the New York State County Executives Association, where I brought together Republicans and Democrats, upstate and downstate, urban, suburban, and rural, executives together to meet with Shelley Silver and Joe Bruno and the governor to get us a cap on the growth of Medicaid, which is one of the biggest factors that has stopped the growth in property taxes at counties throughout the state over the past year. So I have a proven right. You know, I'll fight when I have to fight.
You think he's really going to work with you?
Listen, if I'm elected governor of New York State, it'll send the clearest message to every single politician in the state that business as usual is over because Suozzi got elected. Because Suozzi got elected without the help of the lobbyists, without the help of the politicians, without the help of the insiders, and went directly to the people. It'll show the people that government can work. And again, I can do it because I've done it. Everything I had in my agenda to get accomplished in Albany, I got accomplished by doing the Fix Albany campaign. We have our first Empire Zone we've ever had. We got a cap on the growth of Medicaid, and we got the Sewer and Stormwater Authority done. Okay. I can do it because I've done it.
Thank you. Mr. Spitzer.
Sandy.
What's your solution to resolving this battle right now involving the insurers? And will you abide by all the agreements Governor Pataki has made in terms of redevelopment at that area?
Well, first, let me just state up front, we don't know what those agreements are, and that is part of the problem. There has been absolutely no
transparency. Well, are you on board with the blueprint right now and the ratio of commercial itself, and residential?
Well, the blueprint itself is contingent upon lease agreements being entered into by September, which is a contingency to the Freedom Tower being constructed. Nobody knows if that will or will not happen, so the economic viability of that building is very much in doubt. Just today, the LMDC was disbanded. Or plans to have it disbanded were announced. The LMDC was supposed to be the preeminent decision-making entity with respect to Ground Zero. My office is there. My office is one block away. I was there on that horrific day. We all lost friends, colleagues. We know what the tragedy was. And today, when I look out the window of my office, I see Ground Zero, and you know what I see? Nothing happening. If I look one block beyond that, I see a construction site, a private entity is building. I see cranes, jackhammers, pile drivers. There is a problem with state government, and when there were press releases that were sent out a few months ago saying the governor had announced that a senior aide would now be in charge, there will be no such press release if I'm elected governor, and the reason is very simple. I will personally be in charge. I will make sure we get that redevelopment done. I know how to do it. The insurance companies will pay. They will be obligated to pay, and we will get that development done.
Thank you. In the interest of time, just a quick follow-up. You said a lot of the economics are not clear right now, determined on leases that have to be signed by the end of the year. Do you agree with Mayor Bloomberg and your opponent that more residential units should be placed in that area?
I think right now where things stand is that, again, to get technical, towers 2, 3, and 4, it is agreed, should be commercial. The quantum, the quantity of retail space is very large and is agreed upon. Tower 5 will be a combination of condo, hotel, residential. And then the Freedom Tower is what is up in the air, depending upon whether the economic viability is established. And if you listen to Tony Kosha, if you listen to those at the Port Authority who are speaking about this, you will hear them say the same thing. We don't yet know whether those leases will be executed. If they're not, then we have to reconsider that issue.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sandra. And now we turn to the final question of the night is from my colleague, Brian Lair.
Thank you, Dominic. Mr. Spitzer, I believe you referred tonight to an $11 billion tax cut plan. And I
$11 billion budget savings.
I believe you've referred in the past to an $11 billion plan to fund the public schools in New York City in addition to satisfy the campaign for fiscal equity ruling. I don't think you've gotten specific about how. So you talk about $11 billion in budget reductions to fund that.
That's correct.
But can you get specific and tell us what you will cut or how you will save in order to spend that extra $11 billion on New York City?
I think there's a little bit of confusion. The $11 billion budget savings is what Alan Hevesy, the controller, and I proposed, and it is detailed with great specificity. Some of it comes from the way we handle the state's investments, which are right now, to a certain extent, spread among many different agencies. We can increase those returns. We will do it. Some of it has to do with how we handle non-personal expenditures, everything from buying pencils to information technology. We will do it. Some of it has to do with the way we run the authorities. They have not implemented some of the very smart things the controller has suggested. There are hundreds of millions of dollars per year in savings in health care that we will implement. So that totals $11 billion over 3 years. $6 billion of that 11 is dedicated to the property tax cut that I have explained in great detail, focused on the middle-class taxpayers who need it across the state of New York and the renters in New York City who also pay those taxes through their rent. We will do that. That leaves $5 billion, which we can use to certainly make the first of the sequence of installments on CFE. The CFE payment, the capital piece, has been paid through the bonding that the state legislature approved last year. The operating costs we will pay both through that $5 billion and through increased revenue coming from the VLTs and other revenue generators that derive from casino gambling.
Mr. Swazi, I think that the people of New York City and probably the people of the state feel that there's been a lack of specificity from both of you on what you would do with respect to CFE and how you would pay for it. So how different are you from Mr. Spitzer on how you would approach this issue?
First of all, I put $2.5 billion into the New York City school system to provide for pre-K, to provide for incentives to encourage teachers that are the best teachers to go to the most troubled schools. I'll encourage the more charter schools, high-performing schools. I'll do what we need to do to improve the system here in New York City.
Excuse me, the $2.5 billion, is that less than half of the number that he just proposed?
I don't know what number he's proposed for CFE. Have you proposed a number for CFE?
Tom, it's your answer. I proposed a number.
A specific amount?
We have not. I've not given Brian. No, I've not given a specific number.
I've said $2.5 billion.
You said you're going to consolidate
the purchasing pencils.
We will spend the money.
Let me just point out, one at a time.
I have been very.
Hang on, Mr. Spitzer. Have we just established that all those numbers you gave me before amount to nothing specific on CFE?
No, Brian. What we've said. No, Brian. No, Brian. Quite the contrary. Quite the contrary. What it established is that, unlike my opponent, I have a plan that will cover the specific number we need. Whether it is $4 billion, $5 billion, or $6 billion is still a matter of discussion, dependent upon not just the litigation, but getting the parties to figure out what it will cost to pay for what I proposed in terms of universal pre-K, better teachers, incentive pay, giving the principals the freedom they need, the incentives we need, and the accountability measures to run the school system.
As governor,
there is nobody who can give you a precise number
right
now.
As governor,
but the
wouldn't
one
it
thing
be
I
your
established
job to come up with
that,
a precise number?
Of course it is. And that's why I will do it if I'm elected governor. But what I have done first and foremost is say, here's how we will pay for it. Whether it's 4, 5, or 6, over 4 years, we still need to determine.
Okay.
This is the first time that he's given a number of $4 to $6 billion. This is why we need more debates, to find out specifically what Elliot Spitzer is proposing to do.
What are you proposing, Mr. Swazi? Do you have a number?
I'm proposing $2.5 billion for the New York City schools to settle the CFE case.
Do you think that's enough to satisfy the people? That's very low end of what's being discussed.
I believe it will satisfy their concerns.
It is below the low end.
Okay, well, you've said $4 to $6 billion for the first time tonight, so it's good to hear a number for you for the first time.
It's a number that's been out there for
a long time.
This
is why we need debates.
And your number doesn't even come close.
Okay. Gentlemen, we have gone over the time that we allotted for this time of the debate, so we have to modify the schedule, if you will. We're going to have to pass on the second question that you could ask of your colleague, unfortunately. But now it is time for us to move to what we call the lightning round. And for those watching, they may hear the audience laughing. They may not be familiar with what's about to happen. Well, this is our way of getting elected officials who normally, no offense, gentlemen, have a lot to say on every issue, of getting you to get to the heart of the matter and give us a yes or no answer. And trust me, I think you guys know I will enforce this. A yes or no, and that is it, the only answer. It's also to give us some perspective, if you will, on the personality of the next man who would be governor of New York State. So let's get right to it. Starting with you, Mr. Spitzer, are you interested in becoming president of the United States?
No, no, I am not.
Yes, I am.
Good luck, Tom.
Mr. Swazi, have you ever broken the speed limit while driving?
Yes.
Mr. Spitzer?
Yes.
Just for the record, so that we're clear here, Mr. Spitzer, if you are elected, will you live in the governor's mansion?
Yes, I will.
Yes, I will.
Mr. Swazi, given the high cost of gasoline that affects all of us, should the state give residents a rebate to cover this high cost, part of it?
No, I don't believe so.
Yes, I proposed cutting and capping the state
sales tax. Mr. Spitzer.
The answer is yes.
Yes.
It's not a rebate, it's a cap on the sales tax.
Mr. Spitzer.
Yes, sir.
Do you have an iPod?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Swazi.
No. I use my daughter's.
Okay. Yes or no? Mr. Swazi, should marijuana be legalized for medical use in the state?
Yes.
Mr. Spitzer.
No.
Mr. Spitzer. Have you ever smoked marijuana?
Yes, I have.
Mr. Swazi.
Yes.
What was that?
Yes.
You have. Okay. Mr. Swazi, In the last month, have you been to a supermarket to buy food for your family?
No.
Mr. Spitzer?
Yes.
Mr. Spitzer, overall, are private schools better than public schools? Yes or no?
Overall? Yes.
No.
Mr. Swazi, do you think Hillary Clinton will run for president?
Yes.
Mr. Spitzer?
Yes.
Mr. Spitzer, an issue as it relates to the tri-state area of New York City. If MTA Chairman Peter Calico does not resign, will you try to force him out?
Absolutely.
Mr. Swazi?
No.
Mr. Swazi, have you ever voted for a Republican?
No.
Mr. Spitzer?
Yes.
Mr. Spitzer, should the state close Indian Point nuclear plant?
Yes.
Mr. Swazi?
Yes.
Mr. Swazi, should the Nets Arena project in Brooklyn be allowed to take anyone's property through eminent domain?
That's a very tough question. I'll say no under the current circumstances.
Yes or no?
No.
Yes.
Mr. Spitzer, statewide is fingerprinting for welfare recipients a good idea?
No.
No.
Mr. Swazi?
Absolutely not.
Mr. Swazi, can you achieve universal health care in the state? Again, universal health care in this state if you are elected governor?
Are you going to yes or no for that?
Yes or no.
I can't say I'll try.
Yes or no.
Could I say...
Yes no? or no. Yes or no, Mr. Swazi.
You want a lifeline?
I'll try. I can't answer that.
Yes or no, Mr. Swazi.
No.
Mr. Spitzer.
Yes.
Mr. Spitzer.
But now you have to add another $10 billion to
this
proposal.
Okay, Mr. Spitzer, would you strongly push for the re-implementation of a commuter tax for New York City?
No.
You would not?
No.
Mr. Swazi?
No.
We're almost done, gentlemen. Mr. Swazi, have you ever gambled at a casino?
Yes.
Mr. Spitzer?
Yes.
Mr. Spitzer, do you think students should be allowed to have cell phones in schools?
Yes.
Mr. Swazi?
Yes.
Mr. Swazi, should Washington set a timetable for withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq?
No.
No.
Mr. Spitzer, is building a Second Avenue subway a higher priority than bringing the Long Island Railroad into Grand Central Terminal?
No, they're of equal priority.
Mr. Spitzer, yes or no?
Dominic, they are of equal
Mr.
priority.
Mr. Spitzer, there are rules, yes or no?
The answer is no, it's not a higher priority.
Okay, yes or no?
No.
Okay. Mr. Swazi?
No.
Mr. Swazi, should New York City be given control over the New York City transit system?
No.
No.
No. Okay, one last question, gentlemen, and Mr. Spitzer, it's on you. Do you believe in parental notification when it comes to a minor seeking an abortion?
The current law is appropriate,
Mr.
so
Spitzer,
the answer is no.
The answer is?
No, because the current law is appropriate.
Okay, the answer is no.
That's correct.
Okay, Mr. Swazi.
No.
Okay. We thank you very much, gentlemen, for taking part in the lightning round. And so, as we close this debate tonight, I'm going to ask you to please try to keep your closing remarks as short as possible because we have gone over the time period. Mr. Tom Swazi, the county executive of Nassau County.
I think tonight people have started to hear some of the real differences between Elliot and I. But there's so much more we need to explore. And I hope that Elliot will agree to debate me in some of the broadcast debates and other cable debates that have been scheduled throughout the rest of the state of New York. There are real differences between he and I. There's a clear choice in this race, and 1 hour debate should not determine who's going to be the governor for the next 4 years. I have a proven record as a chief executive. I've proven that I can make government work for people. I've proven that I can make it more affordable. I've proven that I can provide better services to people by managing government well. We can't forget that governments are multi-billion-dollar enterprise. If New York State was a government, if New York State was government was a business, it would be a $113 billion business with 191,000 employees, and it'd be on the brink of bankruptcy. The management team has been more concerned about keeping their jobs than doing their jobs. If New York State was a Wall Street firm, Mr. Spitzer would have indicted it already. But the reality is that in the past 7.5 years, he has not taken on the state government. He's focused all of his energy outside of government on Wall Street and the insurance industry and the record industry.
Thank you, Mr. Swazi. And now, the current Attorney General of New York State, Mr. Elliot Spitzer.
Dominic, thank you. Tom, thank you for participating. Let me just pick up on something you said. I'm not trying to indict state government. I'm trying to take it over. We're trying to reform it. We're going to reform it. We're going to make it work for the people of the state of New York. That is what I've done as Attorney General. That is why Time magazine called me Crusader of the Year. That is what we have done in every industry, whether it's private, public, not-for-profit. We have found problems. We have rooted them out. We have reformed. That is what is necessary. Nobody is a more fervent reformer than I. I've never been elected to a job other than Attorney General. I've not been a career politician. I've been dedicated to making the people's voices heard, restoring the ethics, the values, the moral vision of this great state to government. That is what we have done for 7.5 years. That is what I would like to continue to do. I have the deep-seated optimism and sense of hope that New York State can be restored to what it once was, that beacon of the aspirations for all who are here and who want to come here. All we need is the desire, the energy to do it. I ask the voters of this state to join me in that effort. It will be a great day on January 1st when we begin. Thank you very much.
And we thank you very much, Mr. Spitzer, as well as Mr. Swazi. Thank you very much, candidates, for joining us tonight. That concludes this debate on behalf of New York One, New York One Noticias, Capital News 9, R News, News 10 Now, and WNYC Radio, as well as News 12. I'd like to thank the candidates tonight for attempting to answer all of our questions. And, of course, we would like to thank Pace University and its president, David Caputo, for allowing us for use of their facilities here. Again, thank you and good night.